This is Meredith for Real, the Curious Introvert, and I'm Meredith. Here, we explore the taboo, less obvious, and paradoxical aspects of society. Questions you think but don't ask. Questions that need nuanced answers, not just Google results. These are the conversations you thought you would never get to have. And the goal? To inspire curiosity over judgment. Each episode is different, so bring your ADD and your earbuds and have a look around. Before we get into it, I just want to remind you that if you're listening to this on Google Podcasts, you won't be able to for much longer. I just got a notification that after April 2nd, 2024, you will no longer be able to listen to podcasts there. Thankfully, there's a big export subscriptions button to help you transition to a new app. Okay, so this week's episode is a remastered favorite because it's all about a topic that you enjoy, cult psychology. My guest covers how to determine if something is a cult or a religion, who's most vulnerable to cult recruitment, and she even tackles Scientology, gangs, Jehovah's Witnesses, and MLMs. I touched base with her just before re-airing this episode, and she wanted me to share with you that she has a Zoom support group called Support After Manipulation. And it's for people who have been in cults and manipulative relationships. It's every other Wednesday evening, and details can be found in the episode description. If you end up liking this episode, you'll also like the one I did with a man who was recruited into the KKK after his return from combat. That's episode 134. And lastly, if you like giving your opinion and getting free stuff, you're officially invited to join my private Facebook group. Click the link in the episode description to request to join. All right, friends, keep it curious. Let's be honest. Cult psychology is one of the reasons we all took psychology class in college. When we think of cults, we think of Charles Manson, David Koresh, Warren Jeffs. But what really makes a cult a cult? My next guest is going to help us unpack the more backyard versions of this subject. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist who specializes in helping others recover from cults, manipulators, and systems of control. You can see her weigh in on the Netflix special Unwell in the episode on tantric sex and hear her wisdom on her podcast, Indoctrination. She brings families together, used to live on a kibbutz in Israel. She dusted once, it came back, and she's not falling for it again. Rachel Bernstein, welcome to the show.
It's true. It saves me a lot of time in cleaning. It does.
Yes. I mean, it's basically an unhealthy relationship. I'm sure that's clinical somewhere, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Somewhere. We'll find it.
Well, there's so much to dive in the subjects of cult. And certainly there's a fascination with these high-profile far-off cases of like wild-eyed cult leaders. But, you know, today we're talking about the less obvious, the ones that are even closer to home. So do you think we could start by defining what makes a cult a cult?
Sure. I think it's a really good thing to be able to define because a lot of people will look up the word cult in the dictionary and anything negative. And so the groups that I deal with are what we call destructive cults. Because we're not talking about cult just being a sect. If it were just a sect, if it were just a different kind of group with a different kind of idea, then I wouldn't have any clients because of it. And I wouldn't have families who were so concerned or devastated. And I wouldn't have people who needed so many years of healing after their experiences. So what we're talking about is a group where similar to kind of fundamentalist or controlling kinds of groups, and then we'll make a departure, is that you need to have total and unquestioning devotion to the leader, to the controller, basically, and to the teachings, whether they're philosophy or theology, whatever it is. And if you question it, if you disagree with it, then you're usually publicly shamed or told that your life is going to be awful. You're going to get some disease. You're going to not have a relationship with God. And it's really just because the narcissistic leader can't handle you disagreeing. But the other part where it gets cagey is that there is no system of checks and balances within a cult. Cult groups, independent as they are, have no overseeing kind of body where
you can go to complain to somebody outside of the group, kind of an objective source, and they'll protect you. There's nobody to complain to. And usually cult leaders are protected by laws more so than cult members are, which I suppose we could talk about at some point. The other part, though, is that it becomes your entire life. Unlike taking a yoga class, unlike going to a Bible study, unlike doing whatever it is to become your new family, your new philosophy, your new code of ethics, your new sense of self, and you need to make a full departure from everything else that you've ever known in your life. And then the thing that also gets cult leaders in trouble, which is actually kind of a good thing, is that they feel that rules and laws don't apply to them. They only apply to you. So while your leader can have many wives, you need to be celibate. And while you're sleeping on a mat on the floor, they have a fleet of 44 Rolls Royces.
So systematically, what we would look for is lack of checks and balances and accountability. And then impact-wise, mm-hmm. destruction and exceptionality to, like, the leader being the exception to the rule that he or she is enforcing on us.
Right. And if it bothers you that you need to give everything over to the leader, then again, you're the one put on the hot seat. You're the one who is not getting it, why that needs to be that way, why that makes sense. And whatever it is, it's redirected back onto you. And then when people leave a cult, they also have the same thing happen to them. After they leave, they still go into the world outside believing that whatever happens to them that's bad, even if they get sick, it's because they brought it in. It's because they did something wrong, or it's because they left the cult. Because that's usually one of the things that happens. You're told that something terrible will happen to you if you leave. That's one of the ways they get people to stay.
Interesting. It's a little dicey with cults versus religion, I feel like. Have you found that in your clinical practice, helping your clients see the difference between a religion that maybe just has some non-mainstream thoughts and an actual cult? I mean, what you're describing is a lot of religion. So, yeah, how does one make that distinction aside from the being able to complain to somebody higher up? Because even in some religions, when you can complain to someone higher up, it's really just the appearance that you can complain to someone higher up. It's not an actual system of checks and balances. It's just really, like, I mean, we'll use a very big example of Scientology, right? So it seems that you can report on your fellow Scientologists, but really it just all comes back to you and it's just a big old circle and it just looks like that you have someone looking after you and in fact you don't. You're just being used.
Right. I mean, it does happen. You can't complain about other people in Scientology. You can't say that something bad happened to you. But they love when you report other people. Cults are usually pretty gossipy. And fundamentalist religions are pretty gossipy also. Yeah. People really love being able to raise their stats in a group by having told on other people. So nobody's really safe in a group. So yes, there are a lot of things that are similar to religions. I mean, there's this prosperity principle that you see with some televangelists who will say, you know, send us your last pennies, because we need to work on our moat for our fifth home. And so it's slightly maddening. But what I found seems to be a fundamental difference is in the amount of deception. So while there's deception in a lot of different religions where the leaders will say, you know, this money isn't for me. It's for me to be able to be empowered to help God's kingdom on earth or whatever. It's usually words to justify. Within cults, there's absolute deception. You never know what you're getting involved in when you get involved in a cult. Within, let's say, an Orthodox form of my religion. So I'm Jewish. So let's say I wanted to become Orthodox. I would know ahead of time, be told, this is what you're allowed to wear. This is what you're allowed to eat. This is what you're allowed to do on the Sabbath or not. And these are kind of the expectations. So I would know. I could make an educated decision before getting involved. Within a cult, you never, ever, ever know. There's so many front groups that they use to get people in. You might not even know it's a religion because they're offering new classes about how to help your dental practice. And so there is a lot that you don't know until you're in it, until you see it. And then also, even then, the deception continues because the people who know the least amount about the cult that they're in are the people in it. Because the people in it are kept from accessing information. We can access information. We can watch any kinds of, you know, exposés. We can watch shows and videos. Cult members can't. And so they're usually the ones most in the dark and kept that way on purpose.
So control of information would definitely be a gigantic red flag. But as you said, if you are in the cult, how do you know if there's a control of information per se? And that would be, right. I could see where this would just be really messy.
Yeah, it is. It's very messy. And that's why you can see sometimes if I'm helping out with an intervention or someone's coming to see me and they're saying, you know, this group is completely fine. You don't know what you're talking about. I'll say that. I hope that's true. Mm-hmm. But just in case you happen to see the following things happen, mm-hmm. take note. And then they get this kind of sickening feeling once they start to see what's really true. And they wish they had known. And they didn't know they were being kept from the information to keep them in the dark. Because usually it's portrayed that you can't access the information because it's going to harm you in some way.
Right, right. And so about the people that get in the cults, some of the questions that I got from my listeners are certain personality types more vulnerable? How can we protect our friends and family from getting in cults? From what you're describing to me about how cults work, it kind of sounds like anybody could get tied up into a cult. But in your clinical experience, have you found certain personality types more vulnerable to cult recruitment than others?
I have found, even though, you know, I think there are two things to look at. One is the what, like what part of a personality, what might make you more susceptible? And it's also the when. So the when I'll go through first because that's usually the unexpected part. There are people who will say that they were very susceptible to a message of, we want to be your new family, or we can help you regain your health. We can help you feel connected. We can help you have a relationship with God. We can do whatever. And you were open to it because it was the first time you were away from home, or you just incurred a loss in your family, or you just diagnosed with something. And so suddenly the recruitment pitch worked for you when a couple months before you would have walked right by these people who were trying to get you to come in. So I think that there are a lot of people who will say, I was open to the message then. The part is that for some people, they're looking for connection. They're feeling disenfranchised. They're feeling like they need a sense of connection and community because they just haven't felt that way. They haven't felt like they found their people. And cults will kind of pose as your people. They'll give you a language to use so that you're all speaking the same language. They'll make you feel like you have found it. And so there's this sort of love bombing that happens right away that really draws people in, and people open to that who are not suspicious necessarily are going to love it. People who are a little more suspicious don't get involved in cults as easily. They'll wonder, like, this was a little too easy. Like, what do they want from me?
And describe love bombing.
So the love bombing is this interesting thing that happens where people will try to get you to feel connected either because they see that you are somebody who is really kind of responding very well to the fact that people are smiling in your face. You're not saying like, okay, it's a little too much smiling in my face. what you notice is people are saying, this feels so good. So then they just keep it going and they will then give you lots of compliments, and whatever they see also works in terms of a compliment. Whether it's that they see a good heart in you, or they see that you know, you're someone who the leader would want to really raise up in this group, or that God has anointed, or that you're so smart if it's like a executive success program like in Nexium. And so they'll draw you in by this, what's called love bombing. And I think the other thing that really is good to look at is for people who are accommodating and people also who don't uphold certain kinds of kind of skeptical boundaries, who don't wait to ask the question they need to ask. They just want in, and they feel really good about these people suddenly without taking a moment to think about it. These are people who want, I think, more immediacy in their lives and are afraid that if they sleep on it for a night, they're going to lose this once in a lifetime opportunity. But I always tell people to sleep on it.
Absolutely. So with your definition of cult and kind of how they recruit, not necessarily through personality profile, but more of need in the moment or how that person is feeling, the when more so the who, I can't help but think about like gangs, how gangs recruit, you know, vulnerable socioeconomic populations. I mean, are gangs basically cults?
Yes. Yes. So do you want me to think about that? Yes.
Yes.
As a matter of fact.
We don't think of it that way.
I mean, a lot of people don't think about it that way. Even the mafia has cultish kind of principles and ways of being, where it is your life and it's the way you talk and it's your kind of ethical system suddenly. But one of the first guests I had on my podcast, this man, Adrian Rovellis, he said that he had been involved in gangs. And after I spoke about cults, he walked up and he said, yes, 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 and yes. Check, check, check. And he got involved in gangs. Then he got in jail because of his gang affiliation and what he did. Because you're supposed to prove yourself in a gang and commit a crime to prove that you're willing to. And then he was sent to jail. And then within prison, there were other gangs. And so he got into one gang after another gang, and he just couldn't get out of the system until he finally just had to extricate himself from all of it. But yeah, they become your new family. You need to prove your allegiance to them, just like within a cult. You have a different set of kind of moral standards suddenly that aren't really necessarily who you are, but you're supposed to think that things are okay suddenly and kind of disengage your mind from feeling guilt about what you're doing to somebody else, which also happens in cults. And that it's entirely hard, sometimes impossible, to pull yourself away from it, because they'll just come after you, or they'll make you feel scared of leaving, which happens in cults as well. And there's a lot of deception, because you think that it's to give you these new friends and this new community, but these within gangs and also within cults are the most conditional relationships you've ever had. Because as soon as you leave, or you criticize anyone within it, or you criticize the group, you are out and you're defamed and you're disconnected from and you're gone.
Yeah. There was a lot of interest when I asked my listeners about this subject. And so I'm so glad that I can, in a way, introduce my listeners to you and your services, because it's hard, as you said, even when you're in it and you're the closest to it, that can be the hardest. And so having a resource like you and your knowledge is so valuable. So I would love to ask some questions that some of my listeners sent in before we talk about how one begins to even think about recovering from the trauma of being a cult. One of them really just hit me in the heart because it was so vulnerable. Jen Mueller asks, I'm Jehovah's Witness. Am I in a cult?
Okay, Jen. So I will tell you this, that when I was growing up, I didn't think of Jehovah's Witnesses as a cult. I knew there were people who were going to come to my door, who were going to especially come to my door because I have a mezuzah, a symbol of having a Jewish home. So it's kind of an extra, I guess, they're extra bonus points for, you know, trying to get someone in who's not Christian. So there are always a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons coming to my door. Thank you very much. So what I think is important for your listener to hear is,
again, I didn't know that it had cult-like tendencies until Jehovah's Witnesses and former Jehovah's Witnesses started contacting me and saying, you're a cult expert, right? You're the one who did the video or the thing about cults. Well, I think I was raised in one. I'm a Jehovah's Witness, or I'm a former Jehovah's Witnesses. Like that, these Jehovah's Witnesses were the ones letting me know over and over and over again that it fit the profile from how they were raised. And now within this support group that I do now online, there are a number of former Jehovah's Witnesses. And what I've noticed with people raised in Jehovah's Witness is not only that they start to see that they were in something that was really cultish in its way, but it's incredibly traumatizing. A lot of the people who were raised in it were raised with these images, kind of cartoonish images of the earth opening up and the fires of hell coming up through the cracks in the earth and swallowing up people who are not believers. And so if you don't believe anymore, this is what's going to happen to you. And there was a lot of talk about Armageddon and the end times. And it felt like those were their, you know, good night stories for kids, you know. So be careful so you don't die in your sleep because of a thought that you're having. Good night. So I think it's a little traumatizing. There are a lot of former Jehovah's Witnesses who have post-traumatic stress, who have visions of demons coming to them in their sleep, in their beds, whenever it's dark, especially. Wow. They have a lot of nightmares.
Wow. I am in Pensacola, Florida, which is in the panhandle of Florida. Are you particularly aware of any active cults in or around this area?
There are some cults that are big in Florida, a lot of Bible-based cults. You want to watch out for particular groups that are affiliated with a group called the ICOC, International Churches of Christ, not to be confused with the Mainline Churches of Christ. This is an organization that's gone by different names, but it was started originally by a man named Kip McKean, and it's everywhere, and it's in Florida near you. There are also a number of other groups to watch out for. I'm not sure how close it is to you, but any groups that go by the name La Luz del Mundo, watch out. The leader is now in jail. And Scientology, of course, is big in Florida, Clearwater.
Yeah.
And they have different centers all over Florida, actually all over. There are also some yoga students to watch out for. New names coming up all the time, but anything affiliated with a group called Dawn Yoga, D-A-H-N, it's also in Florida. And there are a lot of retreats also, and a lot of retreats where there's a lot of sexual misconduct by the leader and people going to places in Florida, along the Keys, really anywhere. Wow. A lot of cults in Miami. That are the large group awareness trainings and a lot of multi-level marketing groups in, you know, the bigger cities where are more moneyed, so to speak.
Yeah. So basically, Florida is upholding its reputation in the news. A Florida man, ... Everything, all nuts roll to Florida, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. It's doing well, unfortunately, in that regard.
Maybe we'll change our flag to adjust. Are there many female cult leaders? I've only heard the big names that I mentioned at the beginning of our talk, but I haven't heard any female ones. Is that uncommon?
It's not as common, but you certainly do have them. I'd say it's less than a quarter of cult leaders, if that much, but they do exist and they're just as despicable and dangerous. You also have within a lot of constructs of cults, a male with a female right next to him or beneath him, who's the one who does a lot of recruiting for him and does a lot of the dirty work. And usually the women who will go down, the women who will like be arrested, the women who will leave the paper trail, which is what the male leader kind of sets up to begin with. And the female, it's not clear that that is actually what the male leader was planning all along. There are also a lot of female people who are, you know, people who are recruiting online, like the teal swans, the ones who are these uber spiritual backlit people
who are all camera ready. And so that's so spiritual, isn't it? And then you also have a lot of female empowerment leaders who are running these multi-level marketing systems for women, sort of considered by women, but it really is just for the leader herself. And people who are running yoga studios. And there are also a lot of female, not only females do this, but there are a lot of female coaches who will just take over your life. Male coaches also, whenever they go into kind of an unregulated field and can give themselves kind of a title or moniker that the law doesn't necessarily look over, then they can call themselves a life coach or a spiritual coach or whatever kind of coach. And again, you have zero protection because they will say and do whatever and they don't have to answer to anybody and there's no board to complain to.
Hey, Curiositors, just a quick pause to show gratitude to our sponsors and give you some special deals. My husband and I have been using Liquid IV since 2019. We love that you put it in cold water and it actually dissolves and, you know, tastes awesome. Lately, strawberry lemonade flavor has been my go-to. They also have sugar-free now. And in just one stick, I get 5 essential vitamins and hydrated 2 times faster than water alone. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code CURIOUS at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CURIOUS at liquidiv.com. If you love true crime but hate the shows that leave you hanging, you're going to love the show What Was That Like, hosted by Scott Johnson. He interviews ordinary people with extraordinary stories, like people who survived a mass shooting, found an abandoned baby, or got deals on Shark Tank. Every guest is carefully vetted, and many of the stories have an unexpected insight or inspiration. As you know, I'm not a true crime fan, but I love What Was That Like because it's the victims themselves sharing their stories, and I also love the way that Scott holds space in such a respectful way. In fact, I love the show so much that I accepted an invitation to be a co-host on the weekly Tuesday segment. Find What Was That Like anywhere you listen to podcasts and let me know what you think. Spring has sprung, but so have the mosquitoes, and that can be a real buzzkill. See what I did there? I've been using Insect's mosquito service since 2019, and they continue to impress me. They guarantee their work, and pollinators are always top of mind. Don't wait till the last minute to get on their schedule. If you're in the Florida Panhandle or the Gulf Coast of Alabama, give Insect a call, ensec.net. The Florida Panhandle isn't just the home of your favorite podcaster. That's me, by the way. Shameless, I know. But it's also a go-to spot for a lot of families on vacation. Don't plan a Pensacola trip without getting tickets to the UWF Historic Trust. It's good for a whole week, and it's a great indoor activity option. You'll recognize Trader John's where I record the show in the Pensacola Museum of History. Get your tickets in person so you can show the agent one of my emails and get $2 off an adult ticket. historicpensacola.org. Now back to the show. Remember to stay till the end where I give you a sneak peek of next week's episode.
Right, right. That accountability factor, lack thereof. So let's say somebody listening now realizes, a lot of this is hitting home. I've either come close to or have been in a cult. I may have a lasting effects I'm unaware of that are negatively affecting my life and my relationships. What the heck do I do next?
Right. So if you're noticing that that is something that's happening to you or that happened to you, even if it's in the past, even if you feel like you've broken free from it, I still suggest, just as someone who's sort of slowly uncovering that they might be in something, that you still get help for it. And you still go to talk to a professional who knows about cults. Most therapists do not. So they'll just guide you to talk about other things and never quite get to the cult stuff, because it's just not part of their wheelhouse, and it's unfortunate. So if you want to be able to go to somebody who is referred by a cult organization like the International Cultic Studies Association, they have a resource list and a referral list, which is a really good idea. The other thing that you want to be able to do, even after you've left, is to be able to understand what you were involved in, because you might think that you're safe because you left that group, but you still might not know what to watch out for, and that it can be there in a different form. Because really what makes a cult is not necessarily, again, if it is a yoga class or if it's a Sufi thing or if it's a whatever it is, it's the nature of the relationship between the leader and the followers, the uneven power differential, the manipulation, the undue influence. And again, it can happen in kind of any format tailored to fit that audience. It can also happen within what we call one-on-one cults, within relationships and controlling relationships. So still know what the red flags are. And so, and don't worry that you're the only one who's been through this, or you're the only one gullible enough, or whatever you might judge yourself to be. This happens to thousands and thousands of people every year. And it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It just means you're a human being and you were open at that time, or because of part of your personality to someone swooping in and zeroing in on you because they saw somebody they thought they could control.
Right. Absolutely. And if people want to connect with your services, your books, your podcast, your counseling, tell us, how can they begin to find you and use your experience as a resource in that process?
So I have this weekly podcast, as you mentioned. Thank you for that. It's something I just started. It's a public service. People want to support it, they're welcome to. It'd be great. Keep it on the air. And it's called Indoctrination. And people come on and tell their stories, having been involved in a cult or in a controlling relationship. Someone who's narcissistic took over their lives and drained them of their sense of self and who they were. And I think also for people now that have been having kind of a support group in my office for former cult members, as well as the families and friends of people who are involved in cults who want to know how to respond and what to try, what might work better than others in terms of how to do like mini interventions to try to help open the eyes of their loved ones. And now it's meeting online. Again, every other Wednesday night, Pacific Standard Time. And you can check out my website, rachelbernsteintherapy.com. And also you can check out, I'm on the advisory board of this organization, the International Cultic Studies Association, and they have great conferences all year long now, and classes and articles, and it's a good place to get information and resources and on different shows here and there. But I'm so happy that this is something that people have an interest in. And you're right, people take the psychology class because they're hoping it covers the subject, because it's kind of, you know, it has bite to it and it'll keep your interest, especially if it's a class 8 o'clock in the morning. But I think that it is something also that's really important for people to remember, that if they know, if they have a loved one, a friend, family member who has come out of this and wants to tell you their story, don't offer your opinion. Meaning, don't say, oh, I wouldn't have fallen for that. Or, you know, I don't know why this happened to you. Why didn't you see what you needed to see? They will shut down and they'll stop talking to you because it's too shaming. Yeah. And they'll feel like they're kind of going from out of the frying pan into the fire. A bad situation where they were shamed in the cult and now they're being shamed when they come out. So please just listen and be happy that they're opening up to you. And know again that it only means that they're human beings just like you are, and that you are just as susceptible as they are, given the right set of circumstances.
Absolutely. Thank you. This was so good. I so appreciate your time. I know you are a busy woman, and I know that my listeners will really enjoy learning about this subject. And as we are all feeling more vulnerable with the condition of and state of the world, it's even more important that we educate ourselves on these topics. So thank you again, Rachel. And I hope to be in touch with you in the future. Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, you'll also like the one I did with a man who was recruited into the KKK after his return from combat. It's episode 134. Stay tuned next week for my conversation with a true crime podcaster.